Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
You've made a serious investment in protecting yourself and your family. You've purchased the gun, the ammunition, the training, and even secured a license to carry in your state. You know the Constitution and don't believe you should have to pay for a right that you already have as written in the Second Amendment, but you are law-abiding. Now you are considering the legal defense options you should have if you ever have to use a firearm. Self-Defense Fund is a comprehensive litigation membership backing you on appeals, legal expenses, court costs, and more. Up to $1 million per incident and unlimited attorney costs per member. Discover selfdefensefund.com for yourself. Any weapon, any state, any time.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Herbs have been used by people since the dawn of time. When Rockefeller introduced allopathic medicine, many herbal remedies fell by the wayside as people put their faith in prescription pills and the world just gets sicker. Here at Heathen Herbs, we look to the past and to nature for answers. We offer tinctures, magnesium skin cream, lip balm, tooth powder, colloidal silver throat spray, and more. Check us out at heathenherbs.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. For the last month and more, we've heard again and again from the bot politicians and the Jews talking heads on our telescreens about the Tulsa race riot of 1921, which occurred 100 years ago this month. But they don't call it the Tulsa race riot anymore. It's the Tulsa race massacre, or the Black Wall Street massacre. Instead of a conflict between the races in Tulsa, in which blacks fired the first shots, and in which both whites and blacks were killed, our Jewish media and political overlords and their sycophants and their employees like Joe Biden have tried to portray it as a one-sided attack on blacks by whites, supposedly prompted, and here's a really ridiculous claim, by white jealousy of black financial success. The Tulsa Tribune reported at the time, quote, "A Negro delivery boy who gave his name to the public as Diamond Dick, but who has been identified as Dick Rowland, was arrested on South Greenwood Avenue this morning by officers Carmichael and Pack, charged with attempting to assault a 17-year-old white elevator girl in the Drexel Building early yesterday. He will be tried in municipal court this afternoon on a state charge. The girl said she noticed the Negro a few minutes before the attempted assault, looking up and down the hallway on the third floor of the Drexel building, as if to see if there was anyone in sight, but thought nothing of it at the time. A few minutes later, he entered the elevator, she claimed, and attacked her, scratching her hands and face and tearing her clothes. Her screams brought a clerk from Renberg's store to her assistance, and the Negro fled. He was captured and identified this morning both by the girl and the clerk, police say. Tenants of the Drexel building said the girl is an orphan who works as an elevator operator to pay her way through business college. Close quote. Whites gathered around the courthouse in response to the sensational story. They were not armed. When armed blacks arrived at the courthouse, fired up by equality rhetoric and fueled by a rumor that Roland was about to be lynched, he was not, they confronted the unarmed whites who had gathered there, firing shots into the crowd. 13 whites would ultimately die, along with 26 blacks in the riots that followed. A total of 39 confirmed deaths. Even the wildest claims of those who call this a massacre of blacks by whites don't exceed a claim of 350 black deaths. Remember those numbers. 26 confirmed dead, 350 dead, according to the most hysterical and unverifiable claims. 26 and 350. Those evil racist white people who ran Tulsa impaneled a grand jury to investigate the cause of the riot. That jury stated in its report to the court, quote, "To the Honorable Judge Valjean Bittison of the District Court, Tulsa, Tulsa County, Oklahoma. We, the grand jurors summoned by you to make investigation of the cause or causes of the recent riot and other violations of the law in Tulsa and Tulsa County, beg leave to submit to you the following report, in addition to the indictments and accusations which are already in your hands. We find that the recent race riot was a direct result of an effort on the part of a certain group of colored men who appeared at the courthouse on the night of May 31, 1921, for the purpose of protecting one Dick Roland, then and now in the custody of the sheriff of Tulsa County, for an alleged assault on a young white woman. We have not been able to find any evidence, either from white or colored citizens, that any organized attempt was made or planned to take from the sheriff's custody any prisoner, the crowd assembled about the courthouse being merely spectators and curiosity seekers resulting from rumors circulated about the city. There was no mob spirit among the whites, no talk of lynching, and no arms. The assemblage was a quiet assemblage until the arrival of the armed Negroes, which precipitated and was the direct cause of the entire affair. While we find the presence of the armed Negroes was the direct cause of the riot, we further find that there existed indirect causes, more vital to the public interest than the direct cause. Among these were agitation among the Negroes of social equality. We find that certain propaganda and more or less agitation has been going on among the colored population for a considerable time. This agitation resulted in the accumulation of firearms among the people, and the purchase and storage of quantities of ammunition, all of which was accumulative in the minds of the Negroes. We are glad to exonerate the great majority of the colored people who neither had knowledge of or part in either the agitation or the accumulation and storage of arms and ammunition. We therefore recommend that Colored Town be policed by white officers, that indiscriminate mingling of white and colored races in dance halls, picture shows, and other places of amusement be positively prohibited, and every law be rigidly enforced, to the end that a proper relationship may always be maintained between the two races. Close quote. What happened in Tulsa was a race riot. Whites, their manhood not nearly as dimmed and weakened as it is today, were deeply concerned that a white girl had been attacked by a black male, and gathered at the courthouse to see what justice was being done. Blacks, fearful that one of their own might be lynched, and inflamed by the equality propaganda of their day, promoted even then by Jews and communists, showed up with guns, and true to their heritage of low impulse control, fired into the crowd of whites. A battle ensued, and the blacks lost. If any lesson can be learned from the Tulsa race riots, it's the same lesson to be learned from all race riots. The races don't trust each other. There is racial conflict whenever differing races, and boy do they differ, are required to live in the same society, under the same laws. One race always predominates, and the other or others always resent it. So the lesson to be learned is racial separation, on a continental scale preferably, is a good and necessary thing. Let's compare what happened in Tulsa 100 years ago to what happened just 1,800 miles southeast in Haiti a little more than a century earlier. Here's an excerpt from William Pierce's Bringing Democracy to Haiti. Quote, "In 1789, on the eve of the French Revolution, the population of Saint-Domingue, the French colony, now called Haiti, was about 35,000 whites and nearly 500,000 black slaves. The whites were outnumbered 15-1. They refused to put their political and class differences aside until it was too late, and France, first torn by a self-destructive revolution, and then preoccupied by a series of European wars, was unable to provide assistance when it was needed. The first black insurrection in Saint-Domingue occurred in August 1791. Inspired by a group called the Amis des Noirs and by their own voodoo leaders, the latter of whom persuaded them that they were immune to the whites' weapons, the slaves in the northern part of the colony began attacking their masters as they slept on the night of August 22. White men were hacked to death immediately, if they were fortunate. Otherwise, they were butchered by the voodoo-inflamed blacks in ways too horrible to describe here. The fate of the white women was even worse. The blacks who marched on Le Cap Français carried as their standard a white baby impaled on a spear. More than 2,000 whites were murdered during the first 2 months of the 1791 insurrection. The leftist egalitarian madness of revolutionary France led to the freeing of the blacks and their being simply turned loose and taking over Haiti by sheer force of numbers and the disunity and lack of support for the remaining whites. 13 years later, Haitian black emperor Dessalines took a conciliatory stance. He invited the French settlers who had left after 1791 to return, promising them their safety and the return of their property. Many foolish whites, perhaps befuddled by Republican doctrines of interracial brotherhood and equality, accepted his offer. When, a few months later, Dessalines had cowed his rivals, and it became apparent that Napoleon was again too preoccupied by conflict in Europe to concern himself with matters in the faraway Caribbean, he decided that conciliation was no longer necessary. His promise of security and property rights for the whites was forgotten. Ordinary blacks soon realized that they would not be punished for transgressions against whites. If they saw a white woman they wanted, they seized her. If they saw a white man with a piece of property they wanted, they took it. White resistance to these depredations infuriated the blacks. By the first days of 1805, black gangs were murdering whites on the streets of Port-au-Prince, and the practice quickly spread to other cities. Unlike 1791, in 1805 there was no real urgency about the slaughter. The whites were completely at the mercy of the blacks. There were no military considerations. Killing whites was simply a sport. A mob could entertain itself for hours putting a white man to death in the most horrible ways savage minds could invent. White women could provide amusement for days before they perished. In April, Dessalines gave official sanction to the butchery. By the beginning of May, every white man, woman, and child in the former colony of Saint-Domingue had been murdered. Close quote. Have there been any tear-jerking news stories about this very real massacre? Some 35,000 dead? A large portion of that number living out their last weeks being raped and tortured? Has there been a May 1st commission to memorialize the innocent dead, demanding national and international action to prevent a recurrence of this massacre of whites? Was there a 1991 remembrance? A 2005 remembrance? A 2015 remembrance? Will there be a 2025 remembrance? Will the descendants of white people who somehow escaped the massacre, or their kin who lost family members and all their wealth in the massacre, be allowed to tell their stories on national television or in the New York Times? Will they ever be compensated? Yet, we have resident Biden and all the truckling, crooked politicians in both Oklahoma and Washington, and all the paid whores of the controlled media wailing about Tulsa, where a couple of dozen blacks died after a group of blacks shot first and killed whites. They wail about Tulsa's whites being so racist, but almost never mention that those same racist whites that ran the city actually dropped the charges against the black boy who grabbed Sarah Page. They wail about Tulsa's whites being racist killers, yet never mention that some $2,500,000 in 2021 money was given for relief of the blacks who suffered in the riots. There is an agenda at work here, and we think it is wise to consider that the faux egalitarian agenda, which the super-rich media Jews use to inflame the lower races against innocent white people and blame white people right down to and including white children in working-class households, what few there are left, and white grandmothers on pensions for everything wrong in this world, this faux egalitarian hate whites agenda is even more intense in 2021 America than the egalitarian agenda was in 1791 Haiti. Far more intense, far more pervasive, far more entrenched, far more able to stifle and destroy its critics, far more able to track and to punish. And led by those with an extraordinarily bloody track record from 1917 Russia to 1945 Germany. And it is therefore reasonable to conclude that its denouement may be far more violent and just as devastating as the Haiti massacre was, if we do nothing. The National Alliance is building a living community to prepare for the whirlwind that our enemies and their collaborators and captives have sown.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. to order your two-month supply, call now, toll-free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism fundamentally is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine, a place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with a conservative, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just at dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth, and compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker, nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life just like here could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of it, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces, they just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal. After we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people, and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves, that they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people, and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.